I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. I'm at Symphony Hall with Augustine Hadlick, who has returned to Boston to play the Ligeti Violin Concerto with Thomas Addis conducting. Augustine, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me today.
Hello, hi.
I'm so interested in this piece, but Ligeti himself as a musical figure is so fascinating, and I wonder whether Ligeti's music was music you came to at a different time and what drew you to it, and was the Violin Concerto the first of his pieces that you learned, or did you learn some other music by Ligeti before you even tackled this piece?
Actually, I did play the horn trio, the trio for violin, horn, and piano, before I started learning this piece. But this was the first piece of Ligeti that really blew me away, that really sold me on him as a composer, where I felt like this is really a masterpiece. So Ligeti is interesting because his early music sounds very much like Bartok. And then he had this very long experimental phase. So some of the music, for example, that's used in 2001, Space Odyssey, is like this, where the entire pieces are made up of textures that he's exploring or new techniques that he's developing. And then his later phase, he broke with this avant-garde clique that he had fallen into. He broke with them a little bit and started writing, I want to say, maybe more traditional works like this, you know, where this Violin Concerto, which does draw a lot on tradition and on folk music. And he uses all of the compositional techniques that he had developed during his life, but it's also, it's much more consonant, much more tonal, and it's very, very beautiful and memorable. So when you hear it once, there are things that you really remember and that are fascinating. So the first movement starts in a really magical way with just open strings, but because the concertmaster and the principal violist have tuned their instruments differently in an unusual way, in a microtonal way, basically using the overtone scale as a reference, because the overtone, every note you play has overtones that ring with it, and some of them are not in tune.
And that's just basic laws of physics. That's not something that anybody can control. Overtones create those sound waves that are not in tune naturally.
Yes, and when we play harmonics on each string, the first three harmonics are perfectly in tune, the octave, the fifth, the fourth. Then we get to the major third and minor third intervals, and those are flat. And that's just how it is. You can't change it. And in a strange way, when you hear these intervals, they do sound, even though they sound out of tune based on what we're used to hearing, they also sound right, because physically speaking, they are pure intervals. The idea is that the concertmaster and the principal violist are tuned this way. So when they join me at the very beginning, it creates this otherworldly, ethereal sounds, and then we're all sliding around on each string, playing all the harmonics, and it's really gorgeous. And the whole first movement is in perpetual motion, very fast, very exciting, and a bit scary to perform, I would say. But it's really wonderful when it comes together that there is this mathematical perfection to how everything fits together, and it's, I think, very beautiful. And then the second movement, that's the one that I think everyone will, after having heard it, I don't know if they're gonna walk out whistling the tune, but they could. I mean, it's very, it's a very simple chant that sounds almost medieval, which is then interrupted by a chorus of four ocarinas, which are playing the melody, and it sounds like folk music. Very strange folk music that you've never heard of, but
those are folk instruments. Those are sort of primitive little wind, almost like recorders, but not recorders. They're blown with holes in them to change pitches.
Yes, they're made out of clay, and it's something very unusual. Any orchestra that performs this piece has to get these four ocarinas, which are quite hard to find because they have to be a specific range of pitches. This is a very, very beautiful movement. Which it really convinced me when the first time I heard the piece, really sold me on the concerto, because I feel like a great violin concerto needs to have a movement that is very moving emotionally and beautiful. And he doesn't shy away from having triads in there and pure intervals. And I mean, that doesn't sound revolutionary to us now based on what composers are doing now, but back in the 70s, 80s, when Ligeti's style changed, some of his colleagues were outraged because they felt like, melodies, you shouldn't have melodies anymore, we don't do melodies anymore. And Ligeti at some point said, oh, I don't care, I'm just gonna write what I want. and he was very stubborn anyway, and so he wrote this very beautiful piece. Later on in the fourth movement, the fourth movement is very, very slow and very tortured. And in the fifth movement, all the elements from the whole concertos come together more and more. And you do hear some Hungarian folk music in it too, and it gets pretty wild. And it culminates in a cadenza. And Liso Ligeti left it pretty open, although the score contains a cadenza that was written by the violinist who premiered it. But Thomas Addis wrote his own cadenza for it, and it's really great. I'm really excited to play the US premiere of the cadenza this week. I think that it actually makes the ending of the Kohl concerto make more sense, because the orchestra only plays for three more bars after I'm done with the cadenza. And sometimes the reaction is like, what? It's finished? But the way that Tom ends his cadenza sets that up in such a great way that it feels right, that you feel like, yeah, that's the end, that's how it has to end. So it's really amazing. I think that was one of the things, that one of his starting points is to think about how should it end so that the piece makes sense at when the orchestra comes back in. And the cadenza, per Ligeti's instructions, is extremely fast and frantic and uses all the themes again. And Tom managed maybe what only he can do, which is to write a cadenza that's even harder than the Ligeti concerto. So I've been practicing up a storm, and there are, as usual with Tom's music, some things in there that I've never had to do before, basically. but it's really great. And one thing that strikes me is how much it actually sounds like Ligeti. It really sounds like Ligeti could have written this. Every note is exactly where it should be. You couldn't change a single note in it. It's just exactly how it should be. And in fact, Ligeti's violin concerto was a big influence on Thomas Addis when he wrote his own concerto, and really actually ushered in a bit of a renaissance of the violin concerto form. Because there was a time in the 70s and 80s when very few composers, at least in Europe, were writing concertos. Some of those people who didn't like melodies or rhythms or, you know, anything else that makes music interesting, they also didn't like concertos anymore. And then Ligeti wrote a violin concerto, piano concerto. He wrote all these concertos, and because they were so good, such convincing pieces, so innovative, so yeah. I mean, there's nothing else like this Ligeti violin concerto. And it's very memorable, and so many works written since then. This was only 25 years ago. So many works since then are clearly influenced by it.
You know, you say so many great things about the piece and what makes it distinctive. And I remember reading the profile of you in Musical America after you won the Instrumentalist of the Year award, which is congratulations. But one of the points that this profile made is that you are in the habit of doing like a total score analysis of a piece when you learn a piece. And the way of looking at a score for a concerto, you absorb the entire score, analyze the entire score, get to know the entire piece. Was that a harder process with this piece than it might have been for a so-called standard rep concerto? I mean, or is it really kind of the same process, just a different sort of set of notes?
Yeah, I think my approach is not so different, in the sense that any new piece that I learn, I do look at the score very, very carefully and try to understand everything that's going on, understand a little bit more about how the composer put it together. Because they never wrote the solo violin line first and then the rest. It's always conceived as a whole, and very often, in many great works, the violin is often accompanying the orchestra when the orchestra has the theme. And I don't know, just understanding the whole thing is important. I think, the complexity of this score is much greater. So when I'm when I'm looking at it, well, let me say it this way. If I look at the score of a Mozart concerto, I can pretty much, by looking at the score, I can pretty much hear the whole thing because there's not that many voices. But in the Ligeti concerto, that's not going to happen. I'm going to look at it section by section. And one of the things I look for, especially, is very often I am in dialogue with certain instruments, or I'm playing the tune together with certain instruments, and how the different... this ensemble is kind of always split up into several sections, and one section does this, one section does this, and one section does the third thing, and to understand how that is put together, and basically the things that I should be listening for while I play it, and the things that I should actually not be listening for because they would confuse me. A piece that's rhythmically so complex, if I'm also going to play my part, I just have to basically figure out, you know, What do I watch for? What do I listen for? And what do I need to do, and not get distracted by other things that go on because of the level of complexity. Whereas there are many pieces. For example, the Brahms concerto is a wonderfully collaborative piece, also where the violin is part of a bigger symphonic whole. I love listening to everything that's going on. It's all really interconnected, and there's nothing that's I think one shouldn't pay attention to. In this case, sometimes it's essential when half the orchestra is playing, you know, in one tempo, or it's playing in one meter. They're playing in 4/4. I'm playing in 3/4 meter, and it's somehow fits together. But I just have to stick to my thing, and, yes. And then of course there's a conductor who has the overview and has to keep it all. Keep it all together, and it's a very challenging piece to conduct, definitely. And often, when I've done it, conductors, you know, it's not unusual for conductors to be quite worried about it, and you know, to get some gray hairs in the process.
What is the point of the ocarinas? I mean, I, not to ask too simple a question, but they're so out of the norm for an orchestra piece, and they kind of emerge out of this piece, and you kind of wonder what that sound is, and you have to check and look, and it's so unusual. What was Ligeti doing by including these little wind instruments?
Well, I think in the 20th century and 21st century, composers were always looking to somehow expand the traditional orchestra and keep adding new instruments and finding new instruments. I mean, that's actually what composers were also doing in the 19th century. New brass instruments kept showing up, and so I think that's a little bit the background. But I think he was fascinated by the sound of the ocarina and what it evokes, and it sounds very vocal somehow, very much like a voice, very beautiful in its own way, and somehow a little bit, maybe I was gonna say melancholy or wistful. And it's a wonderful sound. So the idea of having a chorus of four of them sing this tune, I think it enhances the sense, it increases the sense of that you're listening to something ancient somehow. And the chant with which that movement starts, the second movement, it does sound almost medieval. So maybe music from a time long ago, like a long lost culture, I don't know, something like that that he created, and it's it's one of the things that makes that movement very unusual. Now, he could have also, of course, gotten a similar effect by using conventional instruments. It wouldn't have been the same sound color though, and he was a master of orchestration, and the color of the orchestration is very it's very essential in his music. It's a big part of why the music makes you feel what it makes you feel.
Augustin Haderlich, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much. Yes.